My dear Lord, you alone create the universes. O Personality of Godhead, desiring to create these universes, you create them, maintain them, and again wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy, called Yoga Maya. Just as a spider creates a cobweb by its own energy and again winds it up. Please repeat, my dear Lord.
My dear Lord.
You alone create the universes.
You alone create the universes.
O Personality of Godhead.
O Personality of Godhead.
Desiring to create these universes.
Desiring to create these universes.
You create them.
You create them.
Maintain them.
Maintain them.
And again wind them up.
And again wind them up.
By your own energies.
By your own energies.
Which are under control of your second energy.
Which are under the control of your second energy.
Called Yoga Maya.
Called Yoga Maya.
Just as a spider. Creates a cobweb by its own energy and again winds it up. Purpa by Śrīla Prabhupāda. My dear Lord, you alone create the universes of In this verse, two important words nullify the impersonalist theory that everything is God. Here, Kadamba says, O Personality of Godhead, you are alone, but you have various energies. The example of the spider is very significant also. The spider is an individual living entity, and by its energy it creates a cobweb and plays on it. And whenever it likes, it winds up the cobweb, thus ending the play. When the cobweb is manufactured by the saliva of the spider does not become impersonal. Similarly, the creation and manifestation of the material or spiritual energies does not render the creator impersonal. Here the very prayer suggests that God is sentient and can hear the prayers and fulfill the desires of the devotee. Therefore he is Sachit Ananda Vigraha, the form of bliss, knowledge and eternity. Eka Svayam Sanjagata Shisiksaya Viti Atmana the Yoga Maya Sanjasyata Pasi Puna Rishishise Yaturna Nabir Bhagavan Sashakti Vi. My dear Lord, you alone create the universes. O Personality of Godhead, desiring to create these universes, you create them, maintain them, and again wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy called Yoga Maya, just as a spider creates a cobweb by its own energy and again winds it up. Uma jnanatam randasya jnana jnana salakaya chaksurun malatam yena tasmai shri gurve namah shri chaitanya manomistam shabdam ina bhutale svayam rupa gita maya nitati spam bhutantikam shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri adaita garada shri vasari guru vaktavrindam hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare hare. My dear Lord, you alone create the universes of Personality of Godhead. Desiring to create these universes, you create them, maintain them, and again wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy called Yoga Maya. Just as a spider creates a cobweb by its own energy and again winds it up. So here there's some important words. Eka. It begins, Kadamba Muni has said, Eka Svayam. Eka Svayam means one yourself. So this one, Eka Bahunam, in the beginning is one, and that one becomes many. This is the philosophy of Achintya Veda, Abheda Tapa, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one, but that same one has become many. So this is very, very important understanding of God, because people think that because there is energy, and that energy is all-pervading, therefore they think that God must also be all-pervading, which is true. God must be all-pervading because His energy is all-pervading. The all-pervasive energy of God is very, very important to understand, because we are not all-pervading, are we? We are not all-pervading. We are localized. And because we are localized, inside this body, therefore we are actually limited. We are limited to the body. We have a local jurisdiction. And that jurisdiction is very, very limited. So therefore, our individuality is actually repulsive in many ways, because individually we are very tiny. So the idea that God would be localized is automatically repulsive to the impersonalist, because that would make him very limited. This is their psychology. This is their philosophy. The idea that God could be localized, they naturally think that that must put some limitations on God. So therefore, they're much more attracted to the idea that God should be all-pervasive, energy, or that God should be so spread out that He's indescribable, unknowable, unthinkable, unspeakable, untastable, untouchable. So, this is refuted in Vedic literature, because the Supreme Lord, although He's one, although the Supreme Lord is one, He has become many, because that is the sport, God's sporting activities. Just like in our own individuality, even though we're one person, we like to do different things. We like to do, sometimes we like to be the boss, isn't it? We like to control people. And we like to lord it over other people. We like to lord it over other situations. Sometimes we want to be the lover, the Casanova, isn't it? The Romeo. Sometimes we want to be the football player, or the great tennis player, or the great swimmer. Sometimes we want to be the big scientist, big mathematician, big philosopher. Sometimes we want to be a cook. So we go in and we cook. But because we are very tiny, each individual activity that we do is very tiny, isn't it? We may be able to cook a few meals, but can we cook for the whole universe? We may be able to control a few little people in a small situation, but can we control billions of universes? We may be able to love one woman or a few women, but can we love millions and billions, trillions, all at the same time? So that is the difference, because automatically this idea that God is one, or any sort of individuality, is very, very difficult for people to grasp. It's actually very difficult for them, because it indicates some sort of localized limitation. As soon as one is localized, something is localized, the idea then is, how can it then be all-pervasive? It's contradictory, isn't it? It's contradictory to say that something is localized and at the same time it's everywhere. So therefore it says in the Ishupanishad, Tadajati, Tadnajati, Tadare, Tadantiki, Tadatanasya Sarvasya, Tadu Sarvasya Shivaya. The Supreme Lord walks, and He does not walk. He's very far away, and He's very near as well. He's inside of everything, and yet He's outside of everything. These are all contradictions, isn't it? If you say that God walks, but He doesn't walk. If you say He's inside of everything, but He's also outside of everything. These are all very difficult things, because contradiction has to be there in God. It has to be. It has to exist in God. It can't exist in us because we are under laws, and to contradict laws is not within our scope. Isn't it? Just like if you opened your mouth and the sun was inside your mouth, that'd be pretty unusual. Huh? If you opened your mouth. But when Krishna opens his mouth, billions and trillions of universes are in his mouth. You understand? So that means we can understand that he is no ordinary person. And therefore he is called Shaktiman. Here the word is used Shakti B. Swashakti B. By his own energy. The example is used as a spider. The spider is one place. But at the same time, he extends his energy in the form of a web, so as that anyone who enters into his energy, the web, gets entangled. You see? Many little flies, they like to flutter around in the sky, they like to fly around. But if they come anywhere near the spider's web, immediately they become entangled. So this energy of the Supreme Lord is called Maya. And here the word is used, Yoga Maya. This Yoga Maya energy is there according to the desire of the Lord. Just like it says here, that Shishikshaya, with a desire to create. The Lord has the desire to create because he's a person. Just like you have a desire to create. We all want to create something. Most of us just create a mess, isn't it? Or a disturbance. But at least we create something. So the desire to create is in all of us. We have this desire to create. But we're not very good creators. Just like modern technology, we've advanced. So many creations are there. Most of them are pretty useless. They may appear to be very wonderful, but they are pretty useless actually. Because they are very, very tiny imitations of nature. Most creations are imitations of nature. Just like the airplane comes from the bird. Now, the difference between a bird and an airplane is that a bird is able to multiply itself. You don't need to keep creating birds. Suppose you had to go out and every time you had to create pigeons. So you had to produce 1, 2, 3. You'd have to have big factories producing pigeons, isn't it? But because the pigeon, there is male pigeon and female pigeon, then that creation is very wonderful because without any help from you, so many birds are coming. Therefore Krishna says, Bijaham, I am the seed. Bija. Bija means seed. Seed. The seed principle has to be understood because God is there in seeds. That's why all these scientists are very interested in seeds, isn't it? How to study the genetic, the chromosomic or whatever composition of seeds so that they can, by manipulation, try to change the product. But they can't create the seeds. They can manipulate the seed, produce different types of flowers or whatever, different types of tomatoes, or different types of sheep or goats. They can have a sheep's head and a goat's body or something. Look around at nature. But they can't actually create. Therefore, Krishna is so powerful that he can create so many wonderful seeds. It's like these universes are all coming in small balls from his body. So, in this verse, two important words nullify the impersonalist theory that everything is God. Here Kadamba says, O personality of God, you alone. You alone, but you have various energies. So this is very important to understand how the energies are working. But at the same time, one must understand individually the energetic. One must understand the difference between the energy and the energetic. Just like you are also producing energy, isn't it? Your energy. We all have a little bit of energy. But it doesn't mean that the energy and the energetic are exactly the same. In the example that a man may create a car, but that doesn't mean that the car is the man, isn't it? The man and the car are two different things. The man creates the car, but he's not a car. So if you study a car, does that mean you'll know the man? No. You may get an idea that this man must be pretty intelligent, isn't it? If he can create a car, you will get an idea that he must be pretty intelligent. But it doesn't mean by studying the car, you will know the man. You will get an idea. Unfortunately, when people study nature, they think they know God. That is their stupidity. Because by studying nature, how can you know God if you don't know what God is? You won't know what His nature is. Just like if you pass through in a toilet bowl, and someone comes along and says, oh, there's Andrew in the toilet bowl. Isn't it? You can say, oh, look, Andrew's in the toilet bowl. And it's true. That's you. Because you left it there, didn't you? It came out of you. It's part of you. Everything in your body is part of you. But that doesn't mean that if someone studies the stool in the toilet bowl, that they found you. So you have to know, what is that part of you? Now, if someone didn't know you were a person, then how could they know you passed through? You understand? Because if they don't know you're a person, suppose they don't know that, then how will they know you passed through? But as soon as they know that Andrew's got a body, then when they see the stool, they say, yeah, that came out of his body, but it's not Andrew. You understand? It came out of his body, so it is part of the body, but it's not Andrew. So similarly, if you study material energy, and you think that I found God by studying material energy, then you're mudha. Avajananti ma mudha. Krishna says, the fools, the rascals, they do not understand why I come to this material world. They do not understand my appearance in this material world. They are mudha. Avajananti ma mudha. Why? Because they think that, oh, look, Krishna has also taken a material body. He's also become like me. You see? Therefore, they have foolish conceptions. So, without understanding God, you cannot understand how His energy is working. You will not understand. Until you understand the person, how can you understand the energy of the person? You see? You have to understand the person. Just like if you want to understand about me, how are you going to understand? There's so many things you don't know. You can speculate. You can speculate. Now I am a very, very tiny fragment of energy. So even if you don't know about me, the only way you can know about me is by hearing. Isn't it? You can speculate. Maybe, perhaps, but you don't know, because everyone has their aspect that you don't know, the aspect of their lives. So, therefore, this speculative process is very imperfect. Because if you can imagine, you cannot even know an individual until they reveal themselves. How do you get to know someone? They have to reveal themselves to you. Hey, do you know? I'm a psychopathic murderer. You don't know if I am or not. You have no proof that I'm not a psychopathic murderer. Isn't it? You may say, well, he doesn't look like one. But then they say, yeah, but a lot of people don't look like them. Most people who are psychopathic murderers are not always known. So therefore, you can understand that this is the whole business in the material world, that people reveal things about themselves. Hey, Prabhu, I've got a few problems. So therefore, by hearing, you can understand much better, because that person will reveal to you. You have to wait. Just like if a boy meets a girl, they have to reveal each other to each other. They have to reveal things. Isn't it? Very logical, very simple. The girl has to tell the boy, by the way, did you know I've got this, that, 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 or whatever. So, by looking at the girl, the boy may ascertain so many things, but not until he's heard from the girl. And similarly, that hearing will ascertain whether, just like if a boy meets a girl and then the girl says, I can't have children. Isn't it? And suddenly that boy's got to start thinking, well, do I want to marry this girl? She can't even have children. Isn't it? Even though he may be very, very attracted to her, so many attractions, but he has to hear from her certain details which are very important to the relationship. Similarly, everybody wants a relationship with God, but they don't want to hear from him. Do you understand? For individuals to have a relationship with each other, we know that it's essential to hear from the individual. Because you don't know what you're getting involved in. A person could be a complete cuckoo. But you look at things, looking is not very important. It's not very important because, you know, the boy meets the girl or the girl meets the boy and then they start these revealing themselves to each other is very, very important part of the relationship. Because when they start saying things, well, by the way, did you know I murdered 6 people? And the girl's going to be thinking, my goodness. But it's all right, I won't murder you. Isn't it? I won't murder you. I murdered 6 other women. I get a bit excited and sometimes I chop their heads off. I bury them underneath the patio. For you, I won't do it. That girl's going to be gone as fast as you can, because that is a revelation. So, to understand tiny little insignificant creatures, we need, just like when we look at a fox, we need to read about the fox, isn't it? We need to read about the cockroaches. We need to read about things. We need to hear. It's no good just looking at something, just like if you're in Africa, you see a big spider. Then you may be thinking, does it bite? Is it poisonous? Will it catch me? What will it do to me? Or you see a snake, you don't know until you hear. And then the scientist says, yeah, this snake, if it bites you, you've got 2 minutes to live. Well, you're going to keep well away from the snake because you've heard properly. Whereas if it says this snake is harmless, then you're not so fearful. So your reactions upon hearing about that particular thing, everything has to be heard about in order to understand. Simple things, whatever we get, most simplest things, we have to hear about them to understand them. It's no good speculating. There are things that look like this or look like that, but until one is properly heard. Similarly, what to speak of the Supreme Personality of God? One has to hear. So Krishna, through his devotee, Kadarva Muni, is explaining his transcendental nature. That he is like the spider. The spider is in one place. If you look at the spider, it's very wonderful because he just stays in one little place, has a snooze, and then as soon as anyone touches his web, the vibration of the web is connected with his body. So immediately he's awakened. Some prey has come. And he's gone. Very fast. Now that web, although they've actually shown where spider can throw the web into the wind and carry it even across a small river or whatever. 60 feet, 70 feet, 80 feet, it can throw in the wind and then it sticks onto something the other end. And then it uses that to make its hubbub. So it can extend for the size of a little spider. That's a long way. 60 feet is a long way. You see? So this is all mystical, isn't it? This is called a chintya shakti, inconceivable. Even you can't build a bridge 60 feet long. And yet that spider, he can do it. He can shoot out this stuff and it goes, the wind carries it. At least they think, they don't know how they do it. They don't know how they do it. They have such big, from here to the window, many times cobwebs can go, big spiders, and they can connect it all up and then make their little arrangement. So, this is wonderful. Even a little spider is bewildering to us. A little spider bewilders us. The scientists are still trying to study Where the heck they get the stuff from? And the fact that it's 10 times stronger than steel. Isn't it? Coming out of their body, yet actually in relative terms, if you took the same fiber, it's stronger than steel, 10 times. That's an incredibly hard stuff. So you can imagine what the poor old fly feels when he gets trapped in it. It's like getting caught up in a huge net of steel. So this spider can produce all that. How? How does he do it? How does a spider do it? This is very. So if we can't even understand a little garden spider, what hope have we got of understanding God? Isn't it? We haven't got a hope. What is it? A snowball's chance in hell, as they say. Huh? Finding a snowball in hell or something. We haven't got a hope in hell of finding what is God. So therefore, these tiny little concoctions that come out of the mind of man are simply useless. They're all useless ways to, because they speculate. They think that because God is great, therefore he's so great he can't be a person. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous, because to say that God can't be a person is a total limitation of God. God can be whatever he likes. That is the meaning of God, that he is completely independent. Without independence, how can he be God? Is he dependent upon your descriptions? Is he dependent upon the laws of nature? Is he under any jurisdiction? So if God is not under any jurisdiction or under any conditions, then he can do whatever he likes, when he likes. But people can't understand the simple thing. They think that when God becomes a boar and comes out of the nose of Lord Brahma, this is fairy tales. But if Krishna wants, he can have billions of boars coming out of the nose of Lord Brahma. Why is he restricted by time and space, by measurement? Why should God be under any kind of measurement? It's actually ludicrous to put God under measurement, because then you're contradicting yourself completely. You're saying that God should be the creator. If he's the creator, then surely he created laws. And if he created the laws, why would he be under them? And if he's not under them, surely he should do things that are beyond the laws of nature. And if he does do things which are beyond the laws of nature, then we say it's mythological. This is our wisdom. So therefore, one has to hear, from the acharyas, the great devotees, Mahajana. One has to hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and directly from the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Chatram. This Maya, this material energy, both moving and unmoving, animate and inanimate, it is working under my direction, Krishna says. There's no one in the history of mankind who's ever said that. Did Jesus Christ said this whole universe is working under my direction? Did Muhammad? None of them. None of the great Krishna is the only person known in the history of mankind who said that all of the universe sprout from me, that I am the creator. And he wasn't shy speaking. He spoke it repeatedly on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to Arjuna. He repeated it over and over again. Aham Sevasya Prabhupada. So many words. Aham, I am. He didn't say. So then what did the person say? He doesn't mean him, he means the unborn, unmanifested, unspoken, untouchable within him. What right have they got to add? You think Krishna's in need of their added speculations? How dare they try to... They think that Krishna left something out to be opinionated by them. They think that they're greater than God, that they should add something to God's words. Isn't it? So God comes to the material world, but he's so pathetic, he can't speak properly. So I needed to come along and write what he really meant. Instead of just how Krishna is speaking. Krishna is speaking. Bhuktaram Yadna Tapasyam Savaloka Mahesya. He is speaking that I am the supreme enjoyer, the supreme controller. I am Sarvaloka Maheshwara. What is this? Sarvaloka means the controller of all the lokas, universes. Nobody is saying that. And yet, Krishna was a person. He is the supreme in Govindam Adipurushottam. He is the original person. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachitan Vigra. So throughout all Vedic literature, he is established as the supreme person. But they want to try to, in somehow, nullify this individuality of God, because it's incomprehensible to their tiny pea brain how God can be an individual person and yet be the controller. And even more wonderful is that Krishna can come and become completely submissive to his devotees in the form as Sri Yasodananda. That's why we glorify these pastimes as Krishna as Nandananda. He is the son of Nanda. That same Supreme Personality of Godhead who is manifesting billions and billions of universes and planets and energies has become the child in the courtyard of Nanda. So therefore the devotee is saying, I should worship Nanda. Because Nanda Maharaj has God playing in his courtyard. Isn't it? You want to understand God. But Nanda Maharaj has God bringing his slippers on his head. Isn't it? Therefore the Vaishnavas worship the devotees. Because the devotees have captured Krishna. Krishna is a great achyuta. He is an hoksaja beyond any jurisdiction of senses, beyond the inconceivability of the mind, beyond everything. And yet, he is captured in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. So therefore, we should worship Nanda Maharaj. We should worship Mother Yashoda. Therefore, Krishna likes to be called Nanda Nanda. He likes to be called Yashoda Nanda. Because he is captured by these devotees. So here the very prayer suggests that God is sentient and can hear the prayers and fulfill the desires of the devotee. We have to understand what is sentience. That is the whole study of Vedic literature. What is sentience? The modern scientists, they have these completely ridiculous ideas of what is consciousness. They think that consciousness is some sort of chemical combination or some sort of material interreaction. And yet we see they're unable to create. Look at the ants. There are billions upon trillions of ants. Isn't it? Humans. So let them create one ant. Even if they do create one ant, what's the big deal? There's billions and billions. But at least let's do one ant and make a fully functional ant. But they can talk about the ant. The ant is this, the ant is that. But they can't create. They can only talk. There's so-called observations. How the energy is working. They can make some talk, but they don't actually understand how this supreme energy of Krishna is working. So his body is Sachit Ananda Vigraha, the form of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. That is the pure description of sentience. That consciousness is bliss and knowledge. These are the two things which are essentially needed in our lives. We need, first of all, we need knowledge. Because knowledge is consciousness, isn't it? There's no separation between consciousness and knowledge. As soon as you're conscious, what is the first thing you do? You take in knowledge, isn't it? When you're unconscious, you don't. As soon as you're conscious, you have to, absorb certain types of information. With your eyes, your seeing, your hearing, your smelling, your touching, tasting, isn't it? All the time, you are collecting various types of knowledge. So these knowledge acquiring senses, they are there because one is in great need of knowledge. Therefore the senses are there to acquire knowledge. Knowledge is essential because knowledge itself is the very substance of the soul. At the moment, that knowledge is not there because we are in the desert. Just like in the desert, you need water, but there's very little water in the desert. So therefore, there's a big endeavor. If you were in the desert, what would you be doing? You'd be looking for water, isn't it? The fact that you're looking for water indicates there's no water there. Because if there was water there, you wouldn't be looking for it. Isn't it? Logical, simple logic. Similarly, the material world is full of ignorance. The fact is, because you're always looking for knowledge. That means you're an ignoramus, isn't it? That means you're a fool, you're an idiot, you're a twit. What's all the words they have? Thickhead, twit, fool, ignoramus, spud, spudhead, huh? Moron, dopehead, brickhead, idiot. Why? Because that is our nature in the material world. The fact that we're searching for knowledge, no one can see the simple factor. The reason we're searching for it, because it isn't here. Like the water in the desert. We're always looking, 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 looking. Questioning. As soon as we get up in the morning, question, question, question. Hey, where's my sock? Hey, where's my this? Where's that? Where's this? Looking, question, question, question. We spend our whole lifetime questioning because the material world is so limited and imperfect that we're all the time trying to ascertain some mastership over it. Isn't it? We need mastership. We need knowledge. Because knowledge brings a certain degree of control over the particular thing. Just like if you say, go in the kitchen and cook. Unless you know how to cook, the kitchen becomes useless, isn't it? The kitchen is only valuable when you have the knowledge. Otherwise, what is the use? You may have so many nice pots and pans and everything, but if you don't know how to cook, what is the use? So the material is only useful when you have the knowledge how to use the material. Therefore, knowledge is not actually there in the material world. We have to acquire it. Acquired knowledge. Isn't it? Acquired. We have to acquire it. Because the material world itself is actually a desert. Just like in the desert there's no water, we have to acquire that water. Where did you get that water, isn't it? Suppose you were in the desert, very, very thirsty, and someone came along with a big jug of water. Hey, where did you get that water? Isn't it? You'd be shocked. You'd be surprised. Oh, where did you get that water? Similarly, in the material world, everyone is ignorant. Everyone is born in ignorance. So when they have some knowledge, hey, where did you get that knowledge? I want that also. Oh, I got it at the university. So I should also get like that. So that way, we see people are in need, so therefore they're always looking for knowledge, for information. Another thing is bliss. Chit, ananda. So these three things, if you study very carefully, you'll find these are the constitution of the self. Knowledge, bliss. Bliss means ananda moya, full of pleasure. We want, we have to have. Just like if you stand in an empty room, just four walls, and you stand in that room, how long can you stand there? Andrew. You don't know? How long? Think about it. You're standing in a room with four walls, a ceiling and a floor. How long are you going to stand there? Depends on what? What does it depend on?
Motivation.
Motivation. What is your motivation? I've said you're standing there. Huh? The thing is, if you stand there, you will become disturbed. You will become disturbed. Because the nature is that one will be searching for varieties. One will have to have some variety. Some variegatedness will have to be there. Therefore, enjoyment means two. It has to be two. Isn't it? You and something else. Whether that something else is food, whether it's association with another person, whether it's going somewhere, whether whatever it is, there's always need of variegatedness. So this variegatedness is the source of our pleasure. So in the material world, everyone is very much desirous of creating a state of happiness by creating a certain environment. Within that environment, we try to have our pleasures. And that's because the nature of the soul is that he is a person. A person means that he has a personality. A personality means variegatedness. Each individual person is recognized by his individual variegatedness. We all are, and even though we're all individual people, we all have different propensities, different thoughts, different ideas, different natures, isn't it? Not everyone's doing the same thing. So therefore this variety should be studied, because that is our individual intrinsic nature, and it comes from the soul. The body is just simply dead, inanimate matter. But as soon as consciousness is there, variety is there. Therefore, how is it difficult to understand that God is the reservoir of all variety? He is the reservoir of all variegatedness. All variegatedness rests in Him. Because He is the creator of everything. So therefore, it would be ridiculous to say that in His creation there is variegatedness and in God there is not. Isn't it? It's kind of ludicrous. Because Krishna is the Chintya Veda Abheda Tapa. He's simultaneously one and different from His creation. Therefore, by studying His creation, one can get some inkling or understanding how variegated that God's mind is. So many wonderful arrangements are coming. And even the energy we're observing is the inferior energy. It's like, just imagine, if you went into a particular town, let's say Birmingham, you have a prison. But you never saw anything of the rest of Birmingham. You only saw the inside of the prison. And you were awestruck. You were dumbfounded. You were amazed. You were absolutely flabbergasted at just seeing one little cell within the prison. Boggled your mind. What to speak of the city? Isn't it? If that's what this prison looks like, just like we can see it practically, that you go to America, they have these really high-tech prisons. Things happen, electronics, and this and that. So many wonderful things are going on. So it's like, because it's a very big, rich country, therefore the prisons even. Whereas you go to a poor place, the prison's just an old hole, and they stick it down and put a piece of the concrete on top. The black hole of Calcutta. So therefore, if this is Krishna's prison, imagine what the city is like, isn't it? Even the prison is full of so much variegatedness. What to speak? And here Krishna is withdrawing his energies, because this place is a separated energy. So like I said before, you can't study the person by looking at his rejects. You have to see the person. So similarly with Krishna, don't try to understand Krishna by studying this very limited material world. But at the same time, you can see how wonderful Krishna, even this inferior energy, is so wonderful. And yet, it's only his separated energy. Okay, we'll finish it. Any questions, Lord?
You know, you said the person's in the room and that, so you need to have to enjoy. So what about when the impersonalists or the people who are supposedly on the spiritual platform are self-satisfied, what we call self-satisfied, but they're not actually, are they, what sort of experience is that? When they haven't realized Krishna as a person, but they are experiencing something that enables them to at least, for sometimes a long time, give up.
Now, obviously the Brahma Jyoti, it's not just like sitting on their light bulb.
What is it?
Well, it's the effulgence of Krishna, so naturally it's full of unlimited potency. The meaning of the word achintya veda abheda tapa means that simultaneously one and different from Krishna. So within that Brahma Jyoti there is an incredible experience of God.
Well, they don't think there's two at that time, or they think it's one.
Yeah, the illusion of the Brahma Jyoti is that the soul is 1/10,000 particles of air, tiny subatomic particle, and it is merged into. Merged means that it's just like the little spark of fire is the effulgence of the body of God. Therefore, it is in one sense not different from Krishna. So, don't think of it like, you know, you shine a torch in the Bible. Is a much huge, more powerful experience than anything from the
world. And it doesn't appear to have very gains.
It doesn't have very gains because the in the sense that the living entity in that state of Brahman realization is incomplete in his realization. But because it's the effulgence coming from the body of God, it does have extremely high states of ananda, bliss in the meaning of this. It's hard to describe because I haven't been there. But from Shastra, it does say that it is a very, very high state of spiritual experience. Although it may not have, of course, for the devotee, it's worse than hell. Because the devotee has no interest in it. Therefore, it's not studied, it's not described or studied or not interested. Still, it is the fullness of God. So, the fullness of God is also full of all the fullness of God. It's not very dangerous there. In other words, God's personality is not in God.
Also, we know you were talking about the point that sometimes we use in our arguments how, oh, so if you say that, then that means you're limiting God. So then sometimes people give different things like, well, in that case, when they say different things that we say, that maybe they're limiting. So they one fellow asked, can God make a person who's greater than him, and instead of, and so as not to get the answer that the devotee becomes greater than Krishna, could God have a greater person that was a superior creator in that way, not just like more powerful, not just that he can conquer my love, but actually a person who's superior in his potency?
Yeah, Krishna does do that. Krishna has advaita machitya manada manantarupa. So therefore the Lord is always expanding in greater and greater ways. If Krishna wants, just like in his form as Vishnu, Krishna is resident in Vrindavan, but at the same time Vishnu is creating all the various universes, Sankarshan, Arjuna, Aniruddha, etc. So one could say that the forms of Vishnu are in one sense, and many people think that in India, greater than Krishna. Because in Vedic literature, Vishnu is the source of the incarnations, not Krishna. So therefore they say, well, look, Krishna only comes once, but Vishnu comes many times. So therefore we see an example where God actually has created himself to be greater than himself. In one sense.
And he's also greater than
himself. Exactly. So it doesn't. That's why we say that God is unlimited, because he has unlimited expansions. So each of those expansions, according to his desire, does different things. Sometimes he comes in one expansion and he fights him when he appears in the material world.
But he never becomes greater.
Huh? No, but the point is that in one sense, Krishna is a Vrindavan. He doesn't create through his energies, he creates in the universe. So if you want to look at him one side, he's just a cowboy living in a village in Vrindavan. But look at Krishna, he does all the things. So you could technically say, which they do in India, they say, well, Krishna is only an avatar of Vishnu. Therefore, Vishnu is.
And then the same question, you know, can that Vishnu be created somewhere greater than him? Where would God be?
It's kind of a mute question because everything is God. So whatever God does, it's still God. You're also God because you're a very tiny God. So he's created you. So therefore, it's mute because whatever God does, it's still God. Suppose Krishna decided that person called Raja is going to be greater than him, but that's still Krishna called Raja. So what does it matter? He's still Krishna.
Because he created.
No, it is Krishna. You see, spirit is not one minus one. It's nothing.
But isn't that why he's still Krishna? Yeah. Because Krishna created him.
Exactly. Krishna is Krishna, and everything is Krishna. Therefore, whatever Krishna does, it's still Krishna. Even if it's greater than Krishna, it's still Krishna. So there's no question that Krishna can't become better than Krishna because everything is Krishna anyway. If he wants to become better, he becomes better.
Yeah.
And then it's still Krishna because he's better than Krishna. So that is the meaning of God. He can do anything.